The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber. He's Jim Cramer. We are live from the New York Stock Exchange. Carl has the morning off. Let's give you a look at futures. Of course, we get started with trading on what Jim and I still like to call hump day. Hump day. Yeah, you can see we are looking for a down open. Our roadmap this morning, though, starts with the increasingly crowded EV market.
Whoa.
Electric truck and SUV company Rivian is making its public debut today. It could be one of the largest IPOs that we have seen on these shores in quite some time.
Oh, true.
We're also going to talk about the risks of rising inflation. Consumer prices, they moved up at the fastest pace in three decades. And we're going to have one of the biggest names in media join us to weigh in on the breakup of GE Discovery CEO. David Zaslav will join us on the phone in a few minutes. Talk about that. Let's start off, though, with this enormous IPO and the move down in Tesla lately. Jim, love to get your thoughts on both.
Well, look, one of the things that people have to recognize is when you have a big deal like Rivian, people don't have a lot of cash hanging around. Big institutions. They have to sell. So what would you sell to get Rivian? Well, you'd sell something that's the equivalent. You'd sell Tesla. So everybody's kind of amazed that Tesla's down. What do they think? That suddenly money came in order to be able to buy Rivian?
Right.
So the whole complex is down, David, because people say, okay, listen, I got to take in my Rivian. I just got my allocation. Maybe your allocation is a little bigger than we think. I don't know.
No. Let me. I got some.
I was hoping you would have it.
This morning.
I'm your Johnny Gilbert. Go ahead.
This is going to be one of those IPOs that you cannot
it's
even imagine. I'm not even going to tell you the oversubscribed numbers because it's not worth it.
Every sovereign. 30? What are you going for? 30?
Every sovereign fund. Every large growth fund, and RJ, the CEO, he approved every single allocation, I'm told. The point I'm making
news.
Is
so
that
tight.
If you're a hedge fund, you didn't get any.
Oh, thank heavens.
And so it's very tight.
So this is not
an
Uber.
So it's all going to be aftermarket here to what you're talking about. And the only way you're going to actually be able to buy it is when it starts trading. And, of course, the question will be, how high?
Okay, so
Jim,
at 90, it's equal to Ford. Everyone likes to do that with Ford. At 100, it's GM.
Okay.
And by the way, let's
I have 861 million shares out. So
well,
at
yes,
100,
people,
that would be 86
thank
billion.
Thank you for pointing that out because there's a lot of hidden shares.
Yes. If you look at the S1, you'll see. I mean, that's eventually the number. They're going to raise $11.5 billion.
No. And David, how many vehicles have they produced?
50. Well, they've got orders for 55,000.
They have produced.
They have produced.
They've done 156 vehicles.
Yeah. No, 100. It's. But you know what? It hits everything.
Only.
It hits everything in this market.
Okay.
It is a growth company. It is the ESG play. Oh. It is. I mean, it hits every single lever that you would imagine. And obviously access to capital, they're going to be able to fund losses for I don't even know how many years to come with $11.5 billion additional dollars and a stock that most likely is going to trade far higher this morning, but we'll see.
Amazon's told me that they're everything they produce will buy.
Right.
Now, can
with
you
those core
that,
investors,
like
those
that?
Cornerstone investors of Amazon and Ford.
Well, what will Farley do with this stock?
I don't know.
He's got a competitive product.
Right.
He put, total of $1.2 billion. He was in one tranche, a second tranche, and then he was also in, the convert. So Farley's got some real decision making. Now, all these comparisons, by the way, about it's equal to one Ford. Well, wait a second. Let's say he has $7 billion. Let's say he has $10 billion.
$10 billion
dollars.
Right.
Now, he can fund his own gigabattery factory. And that, which is something I've asked.
By the way, great investment. It would seem to me if you're Ford, though, you may want to monetize,
I think
right?
You have to nail it. I think you have to say, you know what? I will let mine go if Rivian wants the stock back. Mm-hmm. If they'll let it trade, no ledger. And then he can take the money without hurting his, I'm speaking of Jim Farley, without hurting his credit rating. So right. This is a play on Tesla because people have to sell Tesla to get the Rivian. It's a play on how well this Rivian deal's done because it's actually being done by the man who runs Rivian. And it's a play on what Ford's going to do for its 2022 production.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, Ford is one of their principal stockholders. Of course, as you know,
they put a lot of money.
Yes, one here. I know they did. They put a lot of money.
Why don't we salute
in.
Jim Farley? Is also a great stock picker. Next thing you know, he was in Ethereum, right? Was he in Ethereum?
Now, we'll see where this opens.
Right.
Would you have any interest?
Our period.
No, it most likely won't. It's going to be a while. One would expect. And again, with the book
like
this tight, with all these sovereign funds stepping up, with everything.
Please explain
been
to people sovereign fund. And
well,
how
sovereign funds are some of the largest pools of capital on the planet.
Right. And they're not going to sell.
They're not going to trade.
Right.
They're going to own this because it fits so many of the characteristics of things you're looking for right now.
And do you think big
growth,
institutions?
And you know this. Growth is still.
No, this is
what
it.
People want.
But
and
the problem,
ESG,
David, is it should it really be worth?
Yeah.
Do you want this thing to be worth from the get-go $80 billion?
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. GM is worth nine. Remember, GM.
Does that make any sense?
GM is,
it's
if it goes
to
$100,
it's
on par with GM, which is $83 billion. It's going to trade at $83 billion. Should it be as large as GM, even though they've only produced 156
billion? I asked the same question, and then you get, well, they have 55,000 orders. And by the way, have you seen the YouTube video of the truck which does donuts?
Right.
That's the second thing
they
say.
They have 100,000 orders.
Watch the YouTube video of that truck going around like this.
They have 100,000 orders from Amazon, but with it also a caveat, which just says we will buy another 100,000. They'll buy everything.
That's over an eight-year period, isn't it?
Whatever they produce, they can. Amazon's captive.
Right.
I don't even know how anyone besides Amazon is going to get it. But this is it, David. This is what this IPO period is about, is Rivian. And I'm glad that you're focused on it.
Well, we should be. It's fascinating. I wish we were going to have an interview with the CEO. We're not.
I wanted
to go out there. They have not. It hasn't happened to their factory in Indiana because
like
I would have liked to see.
By
the way, Lucid at a $72 billion value.
What would be normal in this?
I don't know.
That's a joke.
Oh.
The plant's in Normal, Indiana.
Oh, it's in Normal, Indiana.
Yeah.
But what should...
But
where we end up in terms of valuation, Jim, I will leave to you.
Well, yeah, look, there's going
to
be people.
To you.
But let's do this. Here's things that we have to listen to. There are going to be a bunch of people come on, and they're going to say, wow, I can't believe inflation is 0.9. It was 0.6. Are you kidding me? It should have been 1.0. Who makes these stupid expectations? I don't. I'm not stupid. I didn't go to college to get stupid. And now, on Rivian. Well, we're going to have people come on and say, well, this is really what shows you how much froth there is. Jay Powell's doing it. Like, these people who say these things, what are they like from, like, the Dick Van Dyke Show? I mean, you know, give me a break. What is it, like, Maury Amsterdam? Honestly, I mean, what are they, jokesters? We all know this stuff is happening. What good has it done? What good has it done to people at home that we've kept people out? Because, Rivian, Tesla.
I know. Oh, all right. Okay.
Is it our job to keep people out of making money? Or is our job to monitor that Rivian's happening? Okay.
It is, but you can also raise questions about the underlying value of these companies.
You can raise eyebrows, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I do that with AMC. You bring it up all the time. You're supportive of it, but there's nothing that supports a $22 billion value for that company based on the things that we have been reporting on
for the last
30
years. You want to sell a million shares? Here's what supports it. Want to sell a million shares? 36 bid. That's what supports it. See, it's where you can sell a million shares. That's what matters.
You know,
not like, hold just a second.
Speaking of
that. Don't need a weatherman to tell which way the wind blows.
It's not clear after the earnings. The reactions we're getting in the stock market lately after earnings, whether up or down in these stocks, have been pretty dramatic.
You mean like a toast?
And
last night, which
you
is
can't
toast?
Necessarily sell where you think you might be able to. You're selling down 25 or up 25 a lot more days than you might have thought.
The swings are incredible.
Why? Do you know why? I've been asking the question. I'm not getting straight answers. I mean, there are funds that can't. There are a lot of funds that can't tolerate this kind of volatility. They get out to a certain extent.
Those are called cowards.
There are zero net
funds
that need to cover. Things that they have hedged when they see these kinds of moves.
Yes,
then other people
that's
will
Roblox.
Point to retail.
I had Roblox on last night.
And
what did Roblox do? They did what I expected. But there were a bunch of
those. So
I don't want to call them jokers or mount bombs. I prefer
the 40%.
Excuse me?
Why'd the stock go up 40%?
Because people thought that they would be Peloton. Now, I saw Mr. Foley last night. I already want to apologize for what I'm about to say. But you're not going to hang a jog bra on a Roblox.
You're not going to hang a what?
A jog bra. But when you have
Yes, got it.
When you stop using Peloton because you go back to spin class for the job.
Yeah.
Stick with me here.
Work with me.
Roblox did the quarter, maybe a little bit better. They had some good orders, but we all thought that Roblox was going to collapse once you let kids back to school. It turned out that Roblox is okay. a better Omniverse trade.
It's
an Omniverse play.
Understood.
And so, by the way, can we just go there? People didn't like Unity because they didn't like the Peter Jackson deal.
Did you have the CEO on last night?
What, Unity or Roblox?
Roblox.
I had Roblox, of course.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'm a booking magician.
You are a booking magician.
But Roblox is a very great story.
Do we want to listen to what
story.
He had to say? You want to hear?
You have a sound? What's called a SOT?
Yeah.
Give me an SOT.
All right, I'll give you a little bit.
It took me 7 years
to
learn the sound
on Metaverse Innovation, the CEO of Roblox last night on Mad Money.
Thank you.
For the last 16 years, we've been innovating on this category, building an amazing community, not just of players, but an amazing developer community, 2 million strong, that makes everything on our platform a rich economy. And our whole company is really focused on the innovation to drive and shepherd this vision of what some people call the metaverse or human co-experience forward.
Ooh, human co-experience.
Human co-experience. Is that
everyone's
what we're going to start calling?
Terms. Now, can we just understand that if Mark Zuckerberg's watching, which he's probably not because he's probably doing a little sleeping, but they spent a fortune on safety before they ever got this going. That was another clip that we could have used, but this is better. And they have the legitimate $500 million developers. They want to make all the developers rich. Now, Facebook has a $150 million fund. But, David, what we're missing the whole point here.
Okay, tell me, what's the whole point?
Yesterday, Jensen Huang's keynote, which a lot of people are just poo-pooing because he didn't like break news all over the place.
Yep.
Jensen is talking about what we really care about, David, which he's talking about
CEO
your twin.
Of NVIDIA.
He's
yep.
talking about your twin. You're going to get your twin.
And your digital twin.
Okay, so listen to this. Okay, so he's got your avatar. Now, here's what he has that nobody else has. He has characters who can see, speak, and converse with your digital twin. This is what I've been waiting for. So I don't know how you feel about Milton. My father loved Milton. Not Milton Berle.
Milton, the writer.
The rest.
Yes. Okay.
So you could have Milton read to you.
Yeah.
Francis Bacon maybe jump in and say, look, I don't really like that. And then Shakespeare just trumping everybody.
And can you talk to them?
Can
they answer questions
them?
Or can they just do one thing?
Is
it like the Hall of Presidents at Disney where they get up and then
robots? You can talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
You could tell Cezanne. I'm not kidding. Get this.
Yes.
Cezanne, he was
an artist.
Did
you paint something for me? Yeah.
He was modernist. He's a modernist.
Yes, I'm aware.
You could say to Cezanne, do you mind? Enough with the fruit.
Yeah.
Enough with the fruit. Could you give me a seascape? Okay? You could go to Monet and say, how you doing, fruit? And they understand idiom. By the way, do you know he understands idiom? Like when I met with Jensen, remember
Lilies,
I tell you,
please, Mr. Monet, yeah.
He said, you know what?
What?
I figured out idiom. And I said, in other words, a la Manchurian candidate, if I said go jump in a lake, hey, jump in a lake, or get out of town, his characters
we'll
actually
understand
that that's colloquial.
All right.
So, David, what do you want Jensen to program? How about...
Well, I still have my question. Did he answer it? I'm dead, am I going
to
still be alive in the metaverse?
We'll work on that. But
can
how about
get an
the,
answer from
how
me,
about
please?
The Faber? How about the Nixon Faber interviews?
I don't think Wilfred Frost would be happy about that.
No,
I
was thinking.
I think
that.
He's got the copyright.
No, the Nixon Faber interviews. Nixon
Jim
Frost.
We got so many other names to
David,
get to
but
this morning.
This is the most exciting
it
morning
is,
of the year. Because of Rivian.
Yes, we're going to follow Rivian. We're also going to get to Upstart, which is
having
a bit of a
downstart. By the way, can I
just
say, Andrews, can we get some of Andrews Sorkin stuff?
Sure.
That was a great conference.
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
Amazing.
And it's one.
But coming up next.
Stay tuned.
Coming up next, we're going to talk a bit more about GE and that stunning story yesterday, of course, that we spent a lot of time on. David Zaslav is going to join us, of course, longtime GE employee.
Don't you wish you could have Newman?
Newman?
Newman. Not
Adam
the one
Newman.
No, the one from Seinfeld. Who cares about that guy? He's a washed-up guy.
All right. Take a look at futures. We got a lot more Squawk on the Street coming right back at you.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Well, one day removed from GE's plan announced yesterday morning to split into three companies. Of course, a company we know well, having worked for it when NBC was one of those many properties that were eventually sold. Many say at lows instead of highs, and what was bought at highs. But many people still reacting to that decision, including longtime former employees of the company. Earlier this morning on Squawk Box, you may have heard from Ken Langone, former GE board member, Larry Bossidy, a former member, senior executive at GE, before he moved on to Allied Signal. Let's bring in somebody else who spent a long time at the company, runs a pretty big company of his own, soon to get a lot bigger. He's David Zaslav, the CEO of Discovery, and joins us on the phone. You know, David, just give me your reflections, of course, as a longtime member of the business community here, and certainly one who spent a lot of time with Jack Welch during what were the great days at GE, as you heard that news yesterday.
Thanks, David. Well, look, I mean, Jack really created the first industrial global conglomerate. When we think about global companies now and the FANG companies and the scale and leverage and impact they could have on the world, that's what Jack created with the first global company. I mean, he was in a massive balance sheet, great intellectual capital, the best and the brightest people wanted to work there. Jack himself, a force of nature. But, you know, it was when things got bad at countries, or in the 80s, when the economy turned, it was really GE that was the backstop. GE and Jack were sort of like what Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan were during the financial crisis. And when big assets were sold, it was GE. When companies needed to borrow money to stay afloat, it was GE. When Agnelli was having trouble staying alive with Fiat, and he was so much of the GDP of Italy, it was Jack and GE that got in there and kept Italy going at a time when if they had fallen, you know, Russia was at the border. So, I mean, he was the industrial conglomerate at that point, GE, it was heady times, and it was very, very big impact. The world has changed, but I think Jack's philosophy of being number one, and if anything this tells us, is you have to earn it every day. If the consumers and businesses don't wake up every day wanting to buy your product, then you can't continue to be the most admired and the company of leadership around the world.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've spent a lot of time analyzing what was the slow but steady decline of many of those businesses you're discussing, and many of the decisions that were made after Jack, of course, by longtime CEO Jeff Immelt. But David, I mean, to be fair, you know, do you think that GE Capital, for example, which became so large and profitable during Jack's tenure, should have been reined in earlier? If it had been, would things have been any different than where we are today?
Well, look, I think that the whole question of an industrial conglomerate and the synergy between, there was always a question. I would ask Jack, and the analysts would ask, and they would ask Jeff, what's the reason why GE needs to be together? Even if you have 12 first-in-class businesses, what's the synergy of having them all together? And the real synergy was intellectual, you know, the best and the brightest people and the ability to rotate them around. There was always right. This issue of GE Capital. Because GE had such a big balance sheet, you know, they owned so many assets, and eventually GE Capital really became a massive bank. And, you know, when the economy turned, you know, what happened in the 80s where GE saved businesses and saved the economy, that GE itself needed to be saved. So I think you're right. At that point, something was going on at Capital that was putting the whole company at risk effectively.
Well, that premium that investors were once willing to pay for a conglomerate, obviously, has gone the other way. There is a discount. At least that seems to be the thinking of current management under Larry Culp. Do you agree with the plan as we now know it, to split the company into its three component parts? Do you think it's a good move?
You know, I'm not that close to it, but if you look at the culture, things have changed, in fairness. I think Jack saw for the last 10 years that GE wasn't the same and something was going to need to be done. And look, malls aren't what they were, you know, and the way people buy product, the way businesses are aggregated, I think in the end, it's probably the right thing. The market will tell, but the real question is, having all these different businesses together, what is the synergy? And the synergy before really was a philosophy of being number one and having the best and the brightest people and a great leader in Jack in the middle. And, you know, over the last 20 years, I think a lot of the reasons for doing it have fallen apart.
Yeah. Langone, as I mentioned, was a guest on Squawk Box earlier. David, I don't know if you heard it, but take a listen to what he had to say in terms of Jeff Immelt and that period of time that obviously led to perhaps where we are today.
I read Jeff's book. If you read the book, you think he did a magnificent transformation. He sounds like Biden getting out of Afghanistan.
Jesus. Any thoughts about that?
I'm going to stay away from that one. In some ways, it's sad, but I think the lesson for all of us is GE was an extraordinary company, created a lot of value, but you got to earn it every single day. And I think, you know, now, as he splits this company up, there's still some great assets there. And, you know, whether it's aircraft engines or they're going to have to figure out how to really create great products and create great shareholder value. Otherwise, you know, they're going to get tipped over, too. It's true for all of us.
It's true for you, too. Listen, you know, obviously you want your stock price to be higher. You're in the midst of a very important potential integration as you work through the regulatory on taking in the Warner properties. I mean, that's the name of the game, David. You know, you got to deliver at some point over a period of time for your shareholders, don't you?
Long-term shareholder value is the number one thing that you have to do when you run a company and you get up every day. The way to do it is to create products that people love and want to spend time with, and that's what we all do.
Hey, David, Jim Cramer, thanks for calling in as always. Terrific. You know, I don't really care about mistakes because mistakes, if they're owned, are okay. I care about disclosure. Did the company ever really realize its exposure to long-term care and what it meant? Because I thought it was deceitful. Did they understand how many homes they owned in Europe and how much exposure they had, banks, and how many leases they had? Seemed to just be never really disclosed properly. But I go back over this because there are auditors. There is an audit committee. And, David, this company did not function in a way that I thought was honest or fair, because there were a lot of things that we did not know about it. And a lot of people bought the stock not knowing about this exposure.
Look, I'm simply a media guy. I spent 18 years working there at NBC, and I got a chance to see Jack travel the world, and I got a chance to see what a real global company looks like. I'm not a finance guy, and I'm not an investor. I'm glad I was along for the ride to see a great industrial conglomerate at its height. And now it's a new day, and I hope that all those positions succeed.
And finally, David, since we got you, just a quick question on biz right now. I know you can't talk about too much, but advertising. You know, we've got a number of businesses, because of supply chain issues and the fact that their products may not actually be on the shelves, may be pulling back on advertising. Are you seeing that at all? Any concerns from your perspective?
Well, as I've said, we had probably the strongest up front in that I've ever seen. Having said that, you know, we're not immune to some of these supply chain issues as a media industry, and so we are feeling some of it. But ultimately, you know, advertisers continue to feel that advertising on linear television, you know, is the best way to move product and the best way to build brand. So, you know, in the long run, the outlook is quite good.
All right. Well, we're going to bring you back soon to have a much deeper discussion about your company and what's coming up there. But appreciate you taking time. Thank you, David. David Zaslav.
Big guy.
Discoveries. Sure thing. CEO. All right. We're up next. We're going to get Jim's Mad Dash. We'll count you down to the opening bell 5 minutes from now. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome back. We're going to get to a mad dash, then we'll get you to the opening bell. A lot of stocks to discuss, including Wynn with an unexpected resignation of the CEO, or at least
right.
Tom.
No, I want to call this an unexpectedly expected departure.
Okay.
Because when you listen to what Matt Maddox, who was one of my absolute favorites, who was left-hand man of Steve Wynn, came in. He basically said, listen, I wanted to clean the mess up, and once it was cleaned up, I wanted to go. Well, no one wanted him to go, okay? And he's also helping Macau. Why did no one want to go? Because he maintained the upscale, fabulous tradition that Steve Wynn had, and of course, he also did an amazing job at Macau. Now, there are people who are going to say, wait a second, it cost that company $13 billion to build all the properties. It sells at $10 billion. MGM and Las Vegas Sands are both much, much bigger. Will they buy this company? The reason I say that is because this stock was immediately down 4 as soon as we found that Maddox was out. And then it shot up 5. So I searched for, like, the down 4 is easy because Maddox, no one would believe, is fantastic.
He's also young. He's not, it's not like he's retirement age.
I sent him an email saying I was just completely crushed because I liked him so much.
Consolidation, you never know, I guess. That's been around sometimes. I haven't heard anything lately, but... Jim, we got the opening bell here, of course, and you can take a look. We're most likely going to have more red on that board than green. We didn't get to talk about CPI yet, which we will. Came in at up around 6.2% year over year. And there is the opening bell here. Here at the big board, CIMT, an outsourced IT services provider. That's an IPO. And then you can see it's Rivian, electric vehicle maker, of course, celebrating its IPO, ringing the bell from its manufacturing facility in Normal, Illinois. Earlier, I misspoke and said their manufacturing was in Indiana, Illinois.
I want to again emphasize there are big deals that happen that are not really controlled by the institutions, the brokers, because they lose control of it. Facebook, they lost control of. They lost control of Uber. This one, because management chose to be involved, will not be the kind of fiasco that we often see when the underwriters do it, because the syndicate desk don't care. It's like, oh, all right, well, give me the next one. No, Rivian care, and that's tremendous. And I salute them for actually being involved in the process.
Yeah, and again, just to give you a little insight based on what I've heard in the marketplace this morning, every sovereign fund is lined up for this thing. All the big growth fund and platforms for growth.
And those are people who buy a position.
You're not talking about hedge funds. You're not about those that might quickly exit the stock
with an
allocation of some significance. They're not getting a lot. And by the way, the CEO, I'm told, approved every allocation.
I love that.
We've seen that sometimes. I can remember back to Alibaba, one of the biggest IPOs we've ever saw. Joe Tsai signed off on every allocation. That actually ended up going fairly well as well.
Yes, and that's what I think is expected here. I think people should understand, if you're a big institution, what you'll do is you'll put in for 100% of the deal. You put in for 10%, actually. So I'd like to circle 10%. They're going to get a lot, but in order to be able to get all they need, they have to go in the aftermarket and buy more, and they end up with a great basis because they bought a lot at the opening.
Right.
That's what's going to happen to this one, and I think people have to recognize, don't feel shut out.
Okay.
Don't feel shut out.
Meanwhile, Tesla shares, Jim, down again. We'll see if they rebound a bit. It is below a $1 trillion value, so we're talking over $200 billion in lost market cap in a couple of days, handful of days.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all things considered, Elon picked a real bad time to be the class clown, didn't he, in selling his stock? He could have set up easily a stock sale plan. We wouldn't have to worry about this, but no. He hurt his own cause.
You think so? By what, yeah, having the Twitter poll? And
yeah, the Twitter poll, like what I should do, my estate planning.
Well, as Robert Frank pointed out, you know, in his great reporting pointed out, he had to sell anyway. I mean, he's got a huge tax bill coming because of these options that are going to expire that
but
he's got to exercise.
They're
$6.24 option, by the way. So, I mean,
well,
that's the strike price. So
don't cry for me.
No.
Tesla.
But he's going to have a huge tax bill, as much as $15 billion, so he's got to sell stock in order to pay the tax bill.
It's a very retail-owned stock, and people are going to say, well, wait a second, maybe I got to dodge a bullet here. And then a lot of people own it want to own Rivian. Why not? Rivian's got a great story.
Right.
But, you know, here's one big issue, David. How many underwritings can this market handle? You have Coinbase, which I regard as being a suboptimal situation.
Okay.
We had Unity last night. I liked Unity, but people didn't like the fact that they bought the Peter Jackson business, which I kind of liked, and a negative free cash flow. We had Toast, which I thought was last night's fiasco, fairly disappointing. We had Upstart, where they talked about fraudulent loans.
You're
That's
going
not
through,
so great.
Yeah, well, you know, you're going through them so fast. If you don't mind, can we just slow down, or are you making a broader point about
this? My broader
this?
Point is that we've had a lot of merchandise come, and it's not all been perfect. So now people are like kind of saying, wow, I got very excited about, let's say, Toast.
Well, no, let's say Upstart, because I'm looking at it
right
here.
Well, I happen to like David Drew very much.
And it's down 21.5% to the point that we were making earlier. The moves in many of these stocks are extraordinary, either up or down. But I don't remember a period where we've seen so many plus 20% or down 20% days based on earnings.
I don't know
what the miss was there, Jim. Obviously, this is a new company. It's, you know, AI to help banks make better credit decisions.
Heavy shorted. Now, they did talk about how the end of the being a prisoner of FICO scores, which aren't really well run. These guys have done, they've done a huge number of loans. But here's the problem, David. They mentioned fraudulent loans. They have problem fraudulent loans.
They mentioned fraudulent loans.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, wait a second. Why did they do that? It's, like, very small, but they put that out. So that got people very worried. But the main thing is that these are unseasoned stocks. And nobody
knows
how they
trade.
Well,
they also trade at very significant multiples because they are growth companies. I mean, you know, to put it in perspective, you know, they had $28.6 million in income from operations at Upstart. Adjusted EBITDA was $59 million. I mean, you're talking about, coming in today, a company had a $25 billion market cap.
Right. Now, people came on the call and said, listen, last time you bumped numbers by $150 million, this time you only beat the estimates by $60 million. But what if this, you want fraudulent, it's this whole notion of estimates. I mean, we get, how much did you beat the estimates by?
And if go
you
back a little bit on
and
the
by
chart,
the way, I
so
think there's no fraudulence here
for people.
I think they're great.
Because, you know, it's important, I think, people realize how much the stock has moved up. So can we, five days,
well,
not really helpful.
Right.
There we go. See, that puts it in perspective.
Right. Well, it's just been such a win. Remember, this is, you're no longer a prisoner of FICO. They do it with artificial intelligence. There was a period where if you mention artificial intelligence, then the stock just took off. But they are very well run. I happen to think it's a great company, but it went up so much. And then you have the confusion over PayPal yesterday, which my charitable trust owns.
Yes.
And
what was the confusion, Jim? You were very negative on it, or very
the confusion was
upset.
We thought that the tail end of the eBay overhang where they split and eBay took the business of the credit card.
No longer using their payments.
Right.
No longer
PayPal's
payments.
People are still trying
anymore.
To digest that. They can't digest that. They didn't think that this would be with them. And look, I happen to think, I said in my, for my bullets, for the club, the investment club, there will come a time when you have to buy this.
Right.
You have to.
When is the time, Jim? Is the time
it has,
now?
No, because the time comes to do with the y-axis. When did the seller stop?
I mean, you're back, you can see from that chart, you're back to levels you haven't seen in quite some
no,
time.
No, because people have decided, wait a second, maybe we've got other buy now, pay later outfits, you know, Klarna, and we've got Affirm. I'm spending a lot of time after I leave here, David, with MasterCard.
Okay.
Now, I want to tell you that MasterCard is a no-nonsense, fabulous company.
Yes.
With, you know, that A.J. Bonga put on a path and Mr. Michael Miebach, has taken it there. And that's a paper to plastic. It's an incredibly well-run company. It's far bigger than all these other guys. But the market is mispricing a lot of merchandise. Smaller companies that they think are going to take over the world. And individuals at home are probably saying, well, wait a second, I thought Toast was point of sale and they dominated. No, Lightspeed came out and said, we're going to cut prices for point of sale. So, hey, you know what? There'll be a price war. There are price wars in a lot of places. Unity, David, let's talk about that for a second, okay?
Okay, please.
Unity is metaverse, right? And what they decided to do is they bought this company, Weta, which is, you might know, Peter Jackson's company from Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And at one point in the conference call, they say, look, you know, you might like us, but we are not able to do the kind of things that you think we can do in terms of the metaverse.
What, in terms of being able recreating to, things in,
yeah,
in terms
like
of the digital
well
experience
as,
you're going to have in the metaverse?
Yeah. And, you know, that hurt.
Yeah. Although,
you know, they talked
in
about
this
how
market, that's
it's not
that
the
bad
best
a decline
tool for mustache. And then, by the way, Apple iOS issues with a lot of different companies like Poshmark.
Jim, we spent some time, of course, with Mr. Zaslav talking about GE.
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm going to focus you on GE because you used to spend a lot of time talking about this guy, Tusa, the analyst at J.P. Morgan,
yeah,
with great influence.
I like him
he doesn't
very
like
much.
The breakup. He thinks that some of the parts, the bull case is 120 to 125, but he could make an argument for a clear path to 80 to 85 just based on various multiples, peer multiples for the businesses. It's a negative.
It's
man,
horrible.
He just can't do it. He's relentless.
No, he talked about healthcare being very overvalued. He did like the part that was sold to Danaher. I think Steve is a little bit. He's a little bit Ahab on this.
Yes,
there's a little
yes.
bit of Ahab here. Not Starbucks.
Monomaniacal, you think? In
well,
some ways,
I just or? Think that there's a great white out there. It's not going to 88.
Actually, it's a whale. Wasn't a great white.
No, all right.
But
well,
you've got great whites on the brain.
See, the great white.
What's going on with you and great whites?
To Mattawan, New Jersey, and killed five people, and also sold a lot of my Apple iPhones.
Yeah, that was yesterday's.
I'm sorry. It's just when you get that
strange.
That call that you have you been hacked?
No.
When you get the hacked call, there is a moment where you realize that you may have funded a whole city without realizing. David, we have to deal with DoorDash.
Yes, I want to do that.
It was a remarkable quarter. They bought a company called Wolt, W-L-T. It's from Helsinki. And the amazing thing about this, David, is that people love this $8 billion acquisition. They love it because they feel that DoorDash has now sewed up the world when it comes to delivery. They're delivering more things, obviously, than just food.
Right.
They're talking about the lifetime value of a customer. So that's one that survived the Rivian onslaught.
You had the CEO on with you last night on Mad Money.
Tony Hsu. He's remarkable.
And he was talking about sort of executing in terms of the business plan. Let's take a listen.
At the end of the day, is an execution business. It's not a set it and forget it business. And so who we operate with, how we do business, you know, caring about capital efficiency, ripping out every penny of inefficiency and you know, building a business that obsesses over the customer, that's really what the two teams are about.
Stock up 16%. This is a $75 billion market cap company now,
DoorDash? When I met Tony, we had a very contentious lunch where I just said, I think I was right at the end of 2019. I said, well, look, you're going to have something where everybody's going to stay home and have food delivered. Well, COVID, everyone stayed home and had
food. Yeah, no, I remember prior to them going public meeting with him as well. It's still, you know, though, Jim, you come back to some of the size of these companies now and the multiples that they're trading at.
Multiple to sales or multiple earnings.
Yeah, whichever one you want. Now, we are in a world where, what's the 10-year right now? 1.4? Even with CPI running above expectations for 5.9 and hits 6.2, are you concerned at all?
Well, I mean,
we're going to watch Rivian today hit heights that
like
may
Palantir.
Bring it above the market value of Ford and or GM.
Well, I don't mind those because those are always facetious. Those are saying, listen, that's internal combustion engine, and we're dealing with the engine of the future. And I'm not like the chef of the future that fabulous.
Okay, so you're okay with whatever value.
Yeah, well, because I think
there.
That these are technology delivery systems, and one is a delivery system based on something that no one wants for the environment, and the second is a delivery system that is preferable for the environment. And when you have COP26 and you have all these companies fighting to be able to make it so that the planet is not destroyed, you don't want ICE. You don't want internal combustion engine. It's just bad technology. Not unlike, for these people, it's like horse and buggy. It's like a typewriter.
Right.
Except for it's pollution. So
right.
These are different entities. They're different companies by technology. And that's what Ford, Jim Farley, he recognizes that. That's why he's trying to electrify his whole line. That's why he wants to bury Musk.
He does. I know. You've talked about Musk. That a lot. Bury him.
Well, he has a bury Musk unit, I think. It's like the JFK. Remember the RFK unit, the Get Hoffa unit? They worked around the clock to get Hoffa.
That was RFK, right?
RFK.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man, RFK. Very vindictive. Very smart.
Yes.
Just pointing it out. A little history lesson. Well, we're talking about inflation in the 60s. I'll give you a little RFK.
I hear you. I think I've made this point before. Apparently, he held me up when I was a baby, you know, when he was running for Senate.
That's not true.
68 in New York? When was that? 66?
I campaigned for him, and he held you up as a baby?
Yeah.
There's a difference in age, too.
That's what I'm told. Who knows? Could be lore. Could be family lore. I'll ask my mom.
So it's not just Jeopardy. You also... Okay.
Yeah, I'll ask my mom. See if that was true.
Let's get her on the phone.
All right. Still to come. We're going to have more on GE's breakup. We're going to talk to Dave Cote, by the way. He once ran Honeywell. Of course, also ran GE's appliance division. But don't forget Vertiv. That stock's done very well, Jim.
It's one of the few SPACs that I like.
Yes. It was one of the earlier SPACs in the... done quite well. Let's give you a quick bond report here. You can see where we stand on yields. I said 1.4, really, on that 10-year. We're almost touching 1.5, and so up on the day. We'll be right back. You can get on the new CNBC Investing Club with Jim. You can sign up and find out more at cnbc.com/investingclub. Or you can point your phone at the QR code on the screen. You can also do what I do. If you see Jim on the street, you can actually hold up your own phone to his head.
It works like that.
Because he has a QR code embedded in his skull. And that'll also help. Take you right there. We'll be right back.
Yesterday, we spoke with GE CEO Larry Culp. But the conglomerate announced it would be breaking up into three separate companies. Dave, I didn't hear anybody who said anything negative about that. People felt it kind of had it out, including our coming up guests. For more, we're joined now by Dave Cote. He's former CEO of Honeywell. He's former chief executive of GE Appliances. Also, he's done a lot of great stuff. But he's currently executive chairman of Vertiv, which provides technology for data centers. And Dave, I'm going to start with that because that's the matter at hand. It's always great to see you because, Dave, you are Mr. Perspective. Thank you for coming on Squawk on the Street.
Well, you're very kind, Jimmy. Always fun to engage with you.
Okay. I want to talk about Vertiv just for a second because this was a SPAC that was not in search of something to do. It was a SPAC that actually addressed architecture of continuity, addressed basically the data center, and people who really didn't know how to connect the data center to the actual part of the economy that we know. You created a bridge company here. And I think people should know that this was not a SPAC. It was actually a company that made sense.
Yeah, and I think that's, SPACs have come under a lot of discussion. Vilified by many, liked by a few. But at the end of the day, I've always said, you need to take a look at what a SPAC can do for you. One is it can bring money, but really any SPAC can do that. And the real trick is to, if you're a seller, is to combine with a SPAC that can bring some operating perspective to make it a better company on a not just short-term, but a long-term basis. And I think that's what we were able to do with Vertiv, and it's what made that SPAC so unique. That's generally not what SPACs are.
Okay. Dave, you wrote a book, really fantastic book, where you talked about what to do at a company, absolutely. And you talked about how when you came into Honeywell, there were very few people who believed, and you took on all the problems. There were a lot of accounting problems. I know you were quoted this morning in the Wall Street Journal saying that GE was basically too far gone. It had to do what it had to do. But I want to ask you about the accounting problems at GE. Why were they swept under the rug for so long? They were the reasons why GE became a desperado.
Well, first, thank you for the mention of the book. I do appreciate it. It's now on the bestseller list in China also. So it's very global, and I kind of like that. When it comes to the GE stuff, I'd have to say I haven't been there in 22 years. So it's kind of tough for me to opine on what the accounting was or wasn't. I can certainly discuss what I dealt with at Honeywell because I lived that one. But I just don't know enough about the GE financial accounting situation.
Well, the reason I mentioned Dave is only because when Larry Culp came in, there were a lot of issues. I know Mr. Flannery tried to address these, too. There were a lot of issues that kind of no one knew about. And they led to having to have $75 billion in debt offloaded. They led to this this kind of combination of power and renewables that was supposed to be doing really well. David and I reporting endlessly that it wasn't doing well. So was there an alternative? Was there anything that Mr. Culp could do to keep this company together?
Well, I found it kind of interesting. I sent announcement to my youngest son, who started a business in Atlanta, sent it to him and said, hey, just a heads up. And he sent back a note saying, yeah, I remember you said 2 or 3 years ago that this was going to happen. And I sent back a note saying, well, I appreciate you remembering that. And I just felt at the time that the cultural cohesion, the kind of operational focus, the performance versus the S&P 500, which I think is an important dynamic for any company, especially for any kind of conglomerate, all that was missing. And when you get to that point, the best thing to do is get it stable enough so that you can just split it up and let the companies begin anew. Now, you got to find the right leadership. It's not, everybody thinks it's simple. You just break up. There's great people just hanging around that you plug into jobs, and then they take off and do a wonderful job of it. It's not that simple, but it's the likely better alternative.
David, I'll get back to – it's David Faber. I'll get back to Vertiv for a moment. You know, and your perspective on supply chain, labor issues, you know, it's my understanding. I know you guys have a very large backlog, but that there may be labor issues that are – delaying the building of data centers. What are you seeing?
Well, there's all kinds of supply chain issues out there now. I mean, for us, a lot of it was connected to the semiconductor issue as we tried to get component parts, and that's what has caused us to be unable to ship. But at the same time, what we're starting to see are data centers that are going to be unable to be completed because there's no construction labor. At the same time, you're dealing with aggressive inflation. Most of us as business leaders have been saying for months, this is not transitory. This is not a 2 months issue. You're going to be dealing with this for a while. You're starting to see it in the labor market. And I find it astounding that our political solution to this economic fire we have right now is to pour gasoline on it, as my good friend Pam Langone was saying on your show just a couple of weeks ago.
Well, Dave, look, I think you've got that great perspective. It's obvious that Vertiv is a real company, whether it has supply chain problems or not, fully disclosed, by the way, in the last quarter presentation. I want to thank you, and I want to recommend people to read Winning Now, Winning Later, How Companies Can Succeed in the Short Term While Investing for the Long Term. Dave Cote, that book correctly summarizes what you did at Honeywell, but what they didn't do at GE. Thank you for coming.
Well, it's very nice of you to say, and I can promise you it's what we're doing at Vertiv. Guys would tell you it actually works.
It actually does work. Thank you, Dave. Good to see you. See you in February, and maybe we do a little of something that my wife doesn't like to do, which is maybe see some pheasants. See some pheasants and, you know, maybe eat some pheasant. You know, you have to do something in between, but let's not talk about that.
I promise you it'll be fun.
Thank you, Dave.
Dave Cote. Always good to have him, of course. And you know what? He's delivered 20 years worth of delivering returns, certainly.
It's one of the best returns, industrial returns. And yeah. People shouldn't forget that. I mean, Garrison Damchek's doing a great job. And one of the things he did was pick a successor who was willing to undo things, which is pretty great.
By the way, picking a successor, very important for these companies as well. All right, what do you got on MAD tonight?
Rockwell Automation, which I think is a very exciting company, because when you go into these factories, there you see it. Okay, MasterCard, we're going to try to put the end of the buy now, pay later, love affair. And then, the chief spokesperson for the American Migrant Foundation.
Yes.
We're going to have a flat core from Biohaven, which I don't want to say saved my life, but did make it so I can come to work. With their NERTEC soul.
Good for all of us.
Thank you.
Another great show coming up on Mad Money.
Absolutely. By the way, David, here's the deal. My daughter says that you're incredibly funny.
Yes. Well, she's a very, she has great taste and great insight, your daughter.
And you did get held by RFK, and so it was really quite your day.
I did.
Really
I confirmed that I was held as a very small child by RFK. All right. And now you all know that. You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.